finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So here we are again, lads, an All-Ireland final. It's Mayo versus Dublin. It's the rivalry of the last decade. We're kind of into a new decade now, and maybe it's the kickoff of a new rivalry. Who knows with the way the two teams have changed? You know, like, I mean, again, I keep saying a rivalry, Ger, but you're going to say to me, it's not a rivalry when one team always wins.
I wasn't even thinking that, Woody. if I was still on the panel, I definitely would have said, yes, you're absolutely right. But I think at this stage, when one team is winning, and I know Connor, obviously, Quilt your mop, man, you're still hoping. But like, they have been close games and entertaining games. And like I remember playing the 2012 All-Ireland semi-final where Mayo Hockey was out the gate in the first half, and we almost caught them in the second half.
They just kept dragging you down, didn't they?
They just kept dragging us down. Yeah, terrible, terrible.
They brought cynical fouling into the game, that Mayo team.
they certainly did. But you know, it was one of the first times for me I actually experienced Mayo's forwards being cynical and being narky, and Killian O'Connor throwing his elbows out here and there, which is fine, and he was doing what he had to do. But it was the first time that I experienced them being strategically dirty,
and, right?
Which is okay. If you're overseeing the team, you're happy for your forwards to torment the backs coming out, because God knows the backs do enough of it. Like, you know,
the 2013 final, you were centre back for that. That was you know, the first win against Mayo in the final in that decade. Yeah. And I remember watching that match from the press box, thinking, how are you even catching your breath? I think that was the first game where those short kickouts came so quickly that game never went out. It felt like that game was never out of play.
Yeah, it was kind of helter skelter. I remember certainly Jim Gavin in kind of preparing for that game and what would you call it? Reinforcing the importance of keeping the tempo up and not letting the pace drop. And that over the course of the 70 odd minutes, we will eventually grind it down. I remember Keith Higgins starting centre forward that first half, up until the point that they put him back on Owen O'Gara, and I was only delighted to see Keith Higgins go back to Owen O'Gara, because he was running everywhere, causing me a bit of bother. And but certainly, yeah, the pace of the game it was kind of non-stop up and down, and with a bit of cynicism from us, I guess in the last 10-15 minutes we kind of grinded it out, and we acted a goal to go bit, as you do, to hold on to the lead, and it was I remember being absolutely knackered, totally knackered after that particular game, and you know yourself, having played games, lads, sometimes matches like that, people, you could be having a beer afterwards or even a few days later, it's really hard to remember some of the key points in the game, because you know so much happens.
Yeah,
if you actually sit down and watch the game back analytically, or you can actually recall some of the key moments in the match.
Unfortunately, Connor, for Mayo, that kind of first final set the tone for how the other finals would go. Mayo, excellent in the first half, but didn't make a count on the scoreboard. Dublin getting a goal, you know, to flatter them really at halftime. Then Mayo scored a goal on 50 minutes to draw level. You think they might push on. They didn't. Dublin score a goal 4 minutes later, you know, and Killian O'Connor has a free at the end. You know, bit of a hard luck story, saying that is there time left, referee? He would have gone for a goal if there was. The ref tells him that there is time left. He taps it over and then to blow up the game. Like, I'm thinking of the 16-17 finals, and there's similar kind of patterns to this.
I think the only game, Willie, that wasn't like that was the first game in the 2015 semi-final. I think Dublin went 7 points up in the second half, and Mayo had a ridiculous comeback, and they probably should have won that game in the end, actually. But it was one of the first ones. It was one of the only ones in that sequence where Mayo were coming from a long way behind. Because as you say, I think, you know, you go back to the 2017 final, Lee Keegan gets the goal about 60 minutes. Andy got the goal in that game that you're on about 50 minutes. Even in that 2015 replay that I'm talking about, Killian got a goal and Lee Keegan had a point chance, I think, to put Mayo 5 up.
Yeah, into the goalie's hands.
And then Kevin McManaman got a goal and Dublin went on to win by 7, I think, in the end. So that has been the pattern, as in, like, that Mayo have, the opportunity has been there for Mayo a lot of the time and they just haven't grasped it. And I don't know, is it because, like, at the start anyway, it's probably been unfamiliar with that scenario for being within touching distance of an All-Ireland and just not being able to grab it. But I suppose the only one then that was completely different was last year when they completely blitzed us after halftime. But if you tell me, Willie, that Mayo are in with a chance after 55, 60 minutes this weekend, well, then I'll slap your hand up.
Well, this is the thing. Even last year, even though they did get hammered in the second half in the end, they were winning at halftime and it was following the same pattern as usual. But, like, it's very difficult even, you know, to talk about the rivalry because the teams have changed so much. You look at those 16-17 finals, like Dermot Connolly, Bernard Brogan, Paul Flynn, Keane O'Sullivan, Philly McMahon, Michael Dara, McCauley, they were all starting in that. And in 17, you had Jack McCaffrey, Paul Mannion, Killian O'Sullivan and Philly McMahon. They were starting. They've moved on. You know, for Mayo, Boyle, Vaughan, Andy Moran, Shamey O'Shea, Jer Cafferkey, Jason Doherty, Keith Higgins, they've all moved on. So, like, I mean, we can't even judge last year's game because, you know, this year, Mayo have Tommy Conroy, they have O'McLaughlin, they have Oisín Mullen, Conor Loftus in midfield, Aidan O'Shea at full forward. Like, it's almost like we're starting a new rivalry all over again, Ger.
Yeah, and those new players coming in, you know, they'll have very, very little emotional attachment to what has gone on in the previous games that you've been chatting about. And for them, it's again, as a player, you do try to get into that mindset of it's just not so much that it's another game, but you got to just take each match as it comes, and that's the way you probably have to be to try to get the best out of yourself and stick to the process and et cetera, without boring people too much. But there's three lads who started the All Ireland final for Dublin 2011 with Stephen Cluxton, Mick Fitz, and James McCarthy, and you know, they're the only three guys that are going for an 8 All Ireland, which is outrageous in fairness to them. So all the other lads in there, some of them would have got game time, they would have come on.
Yeah, there's a few more going for 8. Yeah. They're the three that started the 11.
Yeah, I think it's probably 6 or 7 fellas probably going for the 8 at this stage, you know. But what I would say to you, Wally, is there would be an awful lot of, I suppose, healthy hatred for Mayo in the Dublin camp.
Why is that?
I'll tell you why that is, right? And nothing against Connor and the Mayo man. When I started with Dublin, and Pillar Caffrey was the manager, and lovely guy, Pillar. I used to, in my even late teens, early 20s, coming into the squad, I couldn't understand how there's so much media attention given to some of the Dublin players, how much talking that was done by the Dublin camp, and they hadn't won in All-Ireland yet. And I used to get annoyed and frustrated at the amount of exposure some of the lads got, and how the Kerrys of this world, who were winning during that time, Tyrone obviously winning then as well, they were very cute, Tyrone and Kerry, in talking Dublin up. And Dublin at that time used to lap it up and used to enjoy the slaps in the back when they hadn't won anything. And the sense that would be there, certainly when I was playing that, unfortunately a lot of the Mayo guys, while there is numerous additions gone in there, a lot of the Mayo fellas seem to have similar personas from the outside looking in. This is purely from a sporting context without getting personal in terms of the character of lads. But that would have been the sense that was in the Dublin camp when I was playing. And I would tell you, it's probably the sense that's there with certainly the 6 or 7 fellas who are going for the 8 All-Ireland, or the other lads, you know, another 6 and 7 on top of that who would have competed against Mayo at different times in the latter finals as well of the last decade, you know.
Right, okay, so they're thinking, who are these whippersnappers and why are they being indulged, Connor, I suppose, when they haven't actually won in All-Ireland?
Yeah, no, listen, I can't argue with that in terms of, like, the fact that Mayo haven't you know, gone on and won the All-Ireland, I would say that their perception of maybe some of the players involved is more to do with probably the fanaticism of Mayo supporters, as opposed to, like, you know, a lot of players maybe do put themselves into the position, you know, they would have a high media profile, whatever, and they probably appear.
But do they though? Who would you say? Like, I mean, and I'd pull Jer up on this as well. Like, Who are these lads? Because you see, Aidan O'Shea often gets kind of tarred with that brush. What does Aidan O'Shea do? I couldn't get Aidan O'Shea on the podcast. Do you know what I mean? He only does actual media days where he's probably getting a few quid like anyone else. Dublin players do that.
Yeah.
You know, where has this come from? I understand maybe in the noughties with Kieran MacDonald and the Mort and the blonde hair and the white boots and all that kind of thing. I don't, maybe that's what you were thinking about, Ger, was it, rather than the current crop? Which players would you think of? Like, and there's nothing personal against them. Which would you think does too much media, or, you know, has a profile they don't deserve? Or
It's not so much the profile that a guy doesn't deserve. It's a rightly or wrongly, and it probably does stem back to Conor Mortimer and with the blonde hair. And I'll give you a very real example is when Mickey Whelan, who managed Dublin and St Vincent's, and obviously with Pat Gilroy then as well, and we won in 2011. So Mickey was also working and studying up in DCU, and he was managing the DCU Sigerson team, and Conor Mortimer was playing for it. And I remember Mickey Whelan pulling me up and saying, the way I was talking about Conor Mortimer, I was using a couple of expletives, have never met the fella, but I just had bad opinions of him because of the boots and the flashy stuff, right? In the same way, I remember playing against you, Woody. It's just a sporting context, right? But Mickey, quite religious, quite spiritual, and says, that's not a nice way to be talking about people. I says, apologies, Mickey. Mickey says to me, have you ever even met the fella? I says, no, other than playing against him. And he says, well, you shouldn't be judging the fella unless you actually sit down and meet him. I says, you're right, Mickey, my apologies. But for me and for sports people, different things motivate different players.
Yeah.
And say Mossy Quinn would be very analytical, and he's always about getting better, improving each game. For me, my best games was when I had that healthy hatred of a guy. And I used to make up reasons in my head to dislike people. But for whatever reason, rightly or wrongly, certainly more wrongly, to be honest, if you were to look at real evidence, and unfairly so, there is a perception and a spirit within the Dublin camp going back to, I think it was the 2006 semi-final when Mayo warmed up down the end of the hill.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of stems from. And there's been strong people involved from that 2006 team all the way up to where we are now, and that dislike, has a healthy dislike, a sporting dislike, has kind of carried forward, you know.
Maybe it's stemming from that 2006.
You wouldn't know back then, you know. So
just on those Kerry, or just on those Dublin players who are going for 8 All-Ireland medals, which is just phenomenal, really. And that's the record. Only 5 Kerry players have it: Dennis Moran, Paddy O'Shea, Ger Power, Mikey Sheehy, and Pat Spillane. They're on 8. They're in the 8 club. There has been no one that has got more. So you have Stephen Cluxton, Michael Fitzsimons, James McCarthy, as we've mentioned, Philly McMahon, Kevin McManaman, and Keane O'Sullivan are also going for their 8 All-Ireland, which is just phenomenal. And look, to be honest with you, if we're being honest, James McCarthy is practically guaranteed, injuries aside, of beating that record, whether Cluxton and Fitzsimons stay on. Although Fitzsimons wouldn't be that old either. Fitzsimons is a dark horse there, actually, Connor, isn't he? Like, I mean, I had, before Ger said Fitzsimons, I had Cluxton and McCarthy, you know, who had played in 2011.
Yeah, I was Mick Fitzsimons kind of in and out of the team at the start? Like, I don't think
a few times.
Yeah, he wasn't as consistent a presence at the start. Let's say between maybe 2011 and 2013, certainly, as Cluxton and McCarthy would have been. But then since then, he's probably established himself as definitely the best defender in the Dublin full back line. So I probably wouldn't have had him down for that many as well. But like as you said there, I think by the end of their career, certainly McCarthy is looking at 10 plus anyway. Who knows what Brian Fenton, will Brian Fenton even lose a championship game as long as he plays for Dublin? But it's only when you when you analyze and when you see it on paper, how much it is that you realize what a ridiculous achievement it is.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And Keane O'Sullivan did some media this week and he says, I honestly don't think about it, when he's asked about the 8 All-Ireland medals. I honestly don't think about it. And even All-Irelands and other accolades that have won in the past, they don't register because it's not what the team is trying to do. So we're so involved in the team right now that your mind doesn't even go there. I think when you probably finish up playing in 10 or 20 years time and you're looking back over them, watching old DVDs and you have your medals stored away somewhere, it'll probably hit home at that stage. Right now, no is the honest answer. Ger, is this a cliche? Or can you not appreciate what you've won while you're playing? Or are these fellas so professional now that they're so in the zone and so in, you know, focused that even to wonder about what a road this has been or whatever is just taking your mind off the job?
So I was in my mother's yesterday with parents and brought the kids in with the wife for a bit of dinner. It was their first time in the house with the kids since March the 12th. And the few bits have won, and I'm the fifth of nine kids, so a few other brothers and sisters in the sport, and they've won a few other things. And like all mammies, they have the few bits up around the house. So my younger sister, along with my mother, were trying to give me stuff to take back to put in my house. And if you walked into my home in Portmarnock, Willie, Connor, you struggle to think that a footballer or a sportsman even lived in the house, right? And I don't know what it is, but I packed in Dublin in 2015, but I certainly do now appreciate obviously values is something that you would always have, but I guess I can enjoy them a bit on occasion. And if you're out for beer up the town or in the shops and up at Mass, and a couple of old lads or whoever come up and start talking to you, you come away with you know, a bit of a good feeling that I'm still half recognised, you know. And and it is a nice feeling, and but you don't get too carried away. But like what Keane is saying to you, like he's not spoofing. When you're still playing, it's just so difficult to get away from the fact that, and certainly in Keane's case, having been an ever present and one of the best players that Dublin has ever had, is pushing to get into the team, and he's had his own injury challenges. Keane is probably thinking training session to training session, and as he's driving home from Dublin training last Tuesday or the AB game the weekend gone, he's probably reflecting on moments in that training match that, feck, I should have done this or could have done that. I hope I'm going to get in, pushing hard. And that's just the way you when you get to that level of performance and output as a player, as a top player rather, that you've trained your mind in the same way that you trained your body and you train your muscles. You actually train your mind in how it thinks, and you think like an elite person, an elite sports person. And that's what Keane's probably getting at there, you know.
Yeah, no, that's probably it. And look, there's obviously another side of it, Connor, where this is Keane O'Sullivan in the week of an All-Ireland final. If he starts saying, Jesus, wouldn't the 8 be great? You know, I grew up watching Kerry. Suddenly that's the headline that he doesn't want. Like, I'm all for being honest, but there's a time just to dismiss that question. And like Ger said, he's probably is being honest. But even if that wasn't his honest answer, I would probably understand just giving that answer anyway.
It's like straight out of the Dublin media playbook, I think, especially in the weekend.
we used to catch them out with those questions back before Ger's time.
Not anymore. but I just on that as well. Like I don't know, I think it's kind of an individual thing as well. I'd say it's part of the Dublin mindset to have this attitude that the day that you're satisfied, the day that Keane O'Sullivan starts reflecting on everything he's won, is the day he starts to become complacent. And that's a bit of a danger. But then I look back on, let's say, if you look at like reading Bernard Brogan's book, like it seemed to me that he was determined to be a part of the five in a row, you know, come what may, even though his role in the team wasn't as big as what it used to be. And then you compare that to maybe, say, Paul Flynn, who could have probably hung around, you know, and got a medal and been a part of the five in a row. But he decided he wasn't contributing enough anymore. He wasn't at his peak like he used to be. So he decided to call it a day. So I think it's an individual thing, but I think the prevailing point in terms of this week is that Keane O'Sullivan was never going to say anything else, but that he's only, you know, thinking of the next game and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, exactly. So who's this low build-up going to suit, lads? Like, I mean, I'm thinking it's going to suit Mayo. Less pressure on them. You know, the crowd gets very nervous. No offence, Connor, you know, and James Horn has admitted this can transmit to the players, but I'd say the players are feeling it anyways. You know, on the flip side, Ger, you know, the Dublin crowds used to get on the Dublin team's back. But now if things are going against Dublin, they trust Dublin and they actually support them and get them back rather than, you know, that nervousness spreading throughout the whole stadium.
Yeah, and like I think on a whole, like up until Dublin won and All Ireland or won a couple, like some of the Dublin fans were absolute idiots and the way they carried on and in fairness, Mayo were probably a more affable bunch in terms of their love and support of the players and the couple of disappointments along the way, but appreciative of the effort that the guys put in. I struggled with Dublin supporters in the early part of my career, and one or two altercations and team nights out with fellas being loose with their tongue, where they had no appreciation or understanding of what it takes and what we're trying to do and how hard we're working, you know. So I think from a fan base, I would say it would certainly suit, in the current context, it would suit Mayo, not to have the Mayo players, rather, not to have that 83,000 people there. I think it'll suit the underdog, where the error or the unforced error isn't amplified by the sound coming behind you, and that's something then that would certainly help the Mayo guys. And just to go back briefly on the whole media thing, and Connor mentioned there as well, in terms of how Keane would be managed, and obviously he has to be because he's playing the All Ireland. Keane O'Sullivan has to be managed because he's playing the All Ireland final the weekend. The example I was giving at the beginning of the show was there was no kind of media playbook, there was no strategy or structure around it before Pat Gilroy came in. It was a kind of a looser structure, but with the best will in the world, with Pillar Caffrey and the management, what they were doing, they thought it was okay, but it ends up not being okay. But I think with James Horn back in there as well, I think it is quite tight with the Mayo group. You don't hear a whole lot coming from them outside of what the message is supposed to be coming out from the camp, you know.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Speaking of Pillar Caffrey, he was on Game On, I think it was last night, Connor, and he's actually talking about less pressure on Dublin. And, you know, didn't really think about that, because when I'm talking about less pressure, I'm thinking of the crowd there and the nervousness. But remember, Dublin were going for 5 in a row last year, and I know they didn't pretend or say that they were thinking about it or anything, but it's probably impossible. Pillar said, they said the 5 in a row wasn't spoken about, but it had to be in the background of their every walking moment. Could they create history? When they did it, it must have been a huge relief. And you hear Jack McCaffrey recently talking about the pressure he felt between the drawn game and the replay, and it seemed like almost unbearable for him. That's not there for Dublin this year.
Yeah, well, the standout thing for me with that, Willie, was Jim Gavin's kind of reaction to the 5 in a row last year. Maybe Jim Gavin knew. Now, I know he didn't actually step down till a couple of months after the final, till a while after the final. And maybe he knew in his heart of hearts that was, once he did the 5 in a row, that was it. But his demeanor was noticeably more relaxed last year after the final compared to, you know, there's been a couple of finals when Dublin have beaten Mayo, and you'd swear he just won an O'Byrne Cup game or something like that. You know, his demeanor hardly changed at all. And I think he was a lot more relaxed. And I think it was kind of like a pressure valve had been released that, you know, while they talked about how they, you know, they didn't think about the 5 in a row or anything like that, but it had to get into people's heads. And I mentioned Bernard Brogan earlier on. He's mentioned it throughout his book as well. So in that way, yes, there is less pressure in Dublin in that regard. But I think, and I'm not just like, I am looking for any straws that I can clutch ahead of the weekend, but I think that the low build up will, or the low pressure build up will suit Mayo a bit more. I think that we have a lot of young players that are playing in their first All Ireland final. And I think if they make some of the mistakes that they made against Tip in the first half, for example, a groan from the crowd or something might get into their head. Whereas if it's just going to be greeted with silence, I think that'll help too. And I think that there's been a couple of moments you referenced there when Andy Moran got the goal in the 2013 final, that the crowd started to get tense. The big one for me is when Lee Keegan scored the goal in 2017. We were 2 points up, I think, with 10 minutes to go. It was uncharted territory for Mayo. And after initial euphoria of Keegan getting the goal, it was just this nervousness that engulfed the Mayo supporters. And I can't speak for the players, but I'd say it couldn't help but affect them as well. Are we actually going to get over the line? So yeah. without all that, I would say it's the low pressure build up or low key build up will suit Mayo. But again, I have to stress that I am looking for any clause.
No, I think you're right. I think it will suit Mayo. And like, I mean, there is an argument to be made that mentally Mayo haven't been able to get the job done, Ger, when that, you know, pressure comes on, and Dublin have been, because at that time, like, the game is in the melting pot, and it's happened too many times that Mayo haven't been able to seal the deal. And maybe that comes down to they're not as mentally strong as Dublin. The pressure of the crowd gets them. And we know, Ger, a lot of the time, it's not always necessarily talent that separates a club player from an intercounty player. Intercounty players can deal with the whole build up to a huge day in Croke Park, and they won't freeze. And then All Ireland winners go to another level, and they're able to deal with, you know, all that pressure at the very, very highest level. You know, something I wouldn't have had experience of, whether I would be able to deal with it. Like, I mean, Killian O'Connor was talking during the week saying about there no crowd being there. It probably takes a small bit of the pressure away. You still know how important every kick is, but it does make it seem like a club match. I won't say a training session, but it does feel more like a normal match than a big event in a vast stadium. Like, I mean, it's a fair bit of honesty out of him there, Ger. So, like, I mean, I'm thinking that definitely the low-key build-up, the no crowd, is just going to be another factor. I do think it will suit Mayo more than Dublin.
I know, absolutely agree with both of you. And as Conor was chatting, a couple of things popped in my head around the crowd and how it will certainly favour the underdog. Like Conor mentioned, if you make a mistake, there's no massive groan from the crowd behind you. In the same way, if Mayo are ahead, that, as Conor mentioned, that nervous excitement which does take over the crowd, and evidence will tell us because of the results that it has crept into the Mayo players, and they made poor decisions and weren't able to seal the deal and win that All Ireland and break the glass ceiling. And then the third thing I was thinking of fully is the march behind the Artane Boys band.
Yeah, that's gone.
That's I've had it twice, and it's one of the most amazing experiences. And you actually have to practice doing the march, and that's something we did under Pat Gilroy. We practiced doing the march, the training camp. I'm not joking. And we lined up, and one of the back room did Michael D. It was Michael D at the time. I'm not sure who was in. Maybe Mary McLeese. I think it was Michael D in 2011. And we did a walk through and did the full march. There was a bit of crack in the training pitch the weekend before the All Ireland final. We had practiced what we might think about. We practiced what we would do if we negative thoughts are coming into your head. And there's actually a great snap of Jack McCaffrey, and I probably have similar ways of thinking and living as Jack would in terms of persona. But Jack is smiling up at the crowd, happy out, walking around, enjoying the experience. And then as soon as the All-Ireland 30 hour on the Veen begins, you're just into the zone, and then off you go. And in fairness, Mayo players have actually dealt with that quite well, because they have started well in numerous games. When they get ahead they become unnerved and unsettled, and that's something that, and Killian O'Connor is right. And as a now that we're pundits now, Willie, and obviously you're working in the media, it's actually probably nice to hear some decent comments from sports people. And I think Killian is right that Killian O'Connor, there is far less pressure there because there's no crowd there, you know.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it is. A couple of stats here to finish up, lads, before we get in to talk about the game. Connor, this will get you all giddy. In Desi Farrell's first season over the Dublin Miners, they lost to Tipperary in the final. That was a late goal. And then in his first season with the under-21s, they lost to Longford in the Leinster Championship by a shock. And now this is his first season over the Dublin Seniors, going for six in a row. Like, I mean, it's written in the stars here.
You're talking about the force again, Willie. You might learn your lesson after the semi-finals, after tipping, and then we saw what happened there. So I read a good one the other day, Willie. It said Mayo have yet to lose a final when David Coldrick was the referee, but he's never actually refereed a final involved in Mayo. We'll come back to touching shows again.
And so someone else said to me, Mayo have never lost an All-Ireland in December during a pandemic.
Listen, it's true. you must be reading John Casey's tweets. He's kind of a joke about the last time something happened being in 1951. So I just hope he's doing it again come, you know, 7:30 on Saturday evening.
Yeah, okay, great stuff, lads. We'll get into the game next.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sappy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
All right, lads, this one is on Saturday night at 5:00. Like, I think I'm going to do the review show on Sunday for anybody listening. What's the point in waiting until Monday? It's on the Saturday night. James Horan was talking during the week, Connor, and he said, I think the way we play, we take calculated risks. We think that's how we play best and our best chance of winning games, and that's what we'll do. You see a lot of teams that don't take risks and play it safe. I don't know if they have a chance of winning with that mindset. And I'm sure he's talking about, I don't think they have a chance of winning against Dublin with that mindset. And I suppose the big risk, calculated risk, that Mayo take is not covering their full back line, their two-man full back line, and committing that extra body to make sure that that press is as good as they can and they can put as much pressure as they can out the field. You know, like, I mean, when I see him saying that it's calculated risk, I immediately think, you know, like, I mean, you can play a man back there and now you're kind of splitting men and you're a man down, and that press is not going to be as effective without that extra man. So you're not going to stop them and you're not going to turn them over high. And what was it, 2-6 against Tipperary in that first half from high turnovers? I think that's the calculated risk James Horan is talking about.
Yeah, I'd probably argue, Woody, that I'm not sure how calculated these risks are, to be honest, just going on the evidence of what we saw against Tip and going on the evidence of what we've seen before. But anyone, like, there's been a narrative in the certainly in Mayo, I'm not sure is it shared nationally, but in the build-up to this final that, like, Mayo will have to change something. You know, Mayo will have to, as in change their approach and change their defensive mindset, even change their defensive setup. And my thinking on that is that you haven't watched James Horan's teams play, basically. He just doesn't do it. He doesn't do sweepers. He doesn't do, you know, it's all about, I think you called it heavy metal football in the review of in the Tip game. And that's it. It's committing to the press. It's committing to winning the ball high up the pitch and winning the ball in the middle of the pitch and taking your chances, you know, leaving loads of space in front of your full back line. If that's the way it's going to be, that's the way it's going to be. What I would say about that is that, like, I just think there's been an element of naivety at times about Mayo's setup in that regard. And I don't mean that you don't commit to the press the way that Mayo have been, but I think that sometimes there's just an element of common sense about it. So, I remember going back to the Tyrone game, for example, in the league, and, you know, Mayo were playing into a gale force breeze, and they still left two men. They left Derek Hanavan and I think I can't remember who else was inside for Tyrone, and 60 yards of space in front of them. And, like, literally, like, they made Conor McKenna look like a hero because he could kick a 60-yard kick pass into Derek Hanavan. All Derek Hanavan had to do was beat his man and score a goal. Whereas in that instance, I don't think that there necessarily has to be 12 men committed to. I think somebody in the half back line or midfield could just have a bit of common sense about them and say, listen, we need to cover here. It's only one man. We can still be committed to the press. And the other thing about that, Willie, is in the Tip game as well, there was loads of examples of Mayo defenders just sticking to their men as opposed to identifying the danger and covering the space. I think there was one goal in particular where Oisín Mullen could have cut across and just stayed with his man and just allowed the Tip player just to run in and slot in an easy goal. So by all means, like, Mayo have to continue with this kind of calculated risks approach, as James Horan says. And I think, like, there's no doubt that James Horan will commit to that. I think teams coming up against Dublin say, we have to do this and we have to, you know, take them on. And they don't end up doing it because they're not fully committed to that philosophy. Whereas James Horan is 100% committed to that philosophy and he's willing to live with the consequences. I think it will. I think it is the way that he has to go. But there is, you know, there is potentially, it could potentially go, you know, it could potentially go, go bad for them. But I think it's the way that Mayo have to play it, and it's the way they will play it on Saturday.
I think so too. Desi Farrell was talking during the week, Chair, and he says, I know there's been some speculation about the Mayo defence, but to be fair, I think they knew the game was in the bag. So this is a great line. So we won't be reading too much into any suspected frailties. Yeah, right, Desi. Like, I mean, pull the other one. Like, I mean, Mayo conceded 10 goal chances to Tipperary, and they conceded them both from long diagonal balls, and they conceded them through running at them. So, that, like, I mean, there's some frailties there. And, Ger, let's be honest, if Dublin aren't working like dogs on potential frailties, they know they could get 2-on-2 inside. You know, they know that kick pass will be on like it wasn't on against Cavan or Westmeath or whoever else they were playing. I'm sure for the next 2 weeks, we won't see the conservative Dublin. You know, you know the conservative Dublin that goes through the hands and they don't give anything away and they get inside it. Like, I think in some ways, those games they've played so far this year are not good preparation for this game, because this could be a completely different game with loads of kick passes on, and Dublin would probably have to change their mindset a little bit in this 2 weeks.
I suppose the and again, listen to the show last week after the Tip Mayo game, and obviously having the Dublin game, you know, Mayo's, I suppose, win and the ease, I would have said, just watching it, up until the point where they switched off. I think it was nearly a poor reflection of the strength of the Munster Championship, and I know we're not talking about that in particular, but Tipperary haven't played at Division 3 all year. Kerry team that got caught up in themselves and thought they were going to win, and they should have won against Cork. A Cork team who just kept themselves in the game against Kerry. A Cork team that pretty much did the same thing against Tipperary in the Munster final. The only thing that was great about the Munster final was that first time that Tip won, was it 85 years or something like that? That they won. And but the amount of mistakes, unforced errors, forced errors in the Munster final, Mayo just capitalized on all of those frailties, to use Desi's word, in the All Ireland semi final. But where Mayo are frail is when, and we mentioned briefly, when they do get a bit of a lead, like all of those Mayo players, they would have expected to have bet Tipperary. Was it Mayo bet Tip in the semi final a few years ago as well? I think, was it?
Yeah,
2017. Yeah.
So they would have expected to have bet Tipperary, and but if the Mayo players switch off, to even a fraction, or you know, 10 goal chances, if they switch off for 2 goal chances, leave Dublin 2 goal chances, Dublin would probably score one of them. At least, you know, Dublin are probably going to score one out of every two, one out of every three goal chances.
But do you think Dublin will kick a lot more into that two-man full forward line than they usually do? Because Dublin have kind of gone away from the kick pass in a lot of ways. And it's understandable because teams are dropping men, you know, back and the kick pass isn't on and they don't want to give away possession. But do you think that they'll go back towards more of a kicking game when that will actually be on more against Mayo?
Yeah, I've enjoyed with watching Dublin this year is the change between Conn O'Callaghan and Kieran Kilkenny, and with Conn coming out and obviously winning a couple of kickouts and setting up a couple of plays on the 45, 50 metre line. I think Dublin have been even more direct this year, but they're only facing a decent opposition, in my opinion, the weekend or on Saturday. This will be their first decent challenge this year outside of the National League. And what the Dublin players will do, Woody, and it's not a loose answer or a poor answer, they will play it as they see it. If the space is in there, and I would worry for Mayo's fullback line with whatever with Chris Barrett, a super guy, a super player, I'd worry with Lee Keegan back there. I think he's a half back, wing back, and that's where I would certainly play him. I would be very worried as a Mayo supporter with the two lads if they're back there. And like Conor mentioned, you don't have a midfielder funneling back, right? So where James Horan talks about taking calculated risks, if, for argument's sake, Dublin have the ball in the right corner back position from a short kick out, or they've turned the ball, they won the ball back. If the Mayo wing forward or corner forward in the right corner forward position, he sees that there's an overlap is going to happen here. They need to be sprinting back really, really quickly, making that decision really, really quickly to try to generate that kind of plus one or maybe plus two in their full back line. If they don't do that, I think they're going to get destroyed in the full back line. And not because the full backs are poor players, but having played in there the odd time in Croke Park, you know, if you've 40, 50 yards of space in front of you and you've a fella, whether he's Division 4 or Division 1, but he's athletic and fit, you know, the advantage is always to the forward in that situation. And then you just look at Dublin forwards and how strong and efficient those players are. If you look at what Con O'Connell did to Lee Keegan in which fight was that, 2018 maybe or 17?
No, last night.
Last year. But Con is so cool and calculated, right? When you make an error as a goalkeeper or fullback, that error is incredibly amplified by your proximity to the goal. When you make that error in the half back line, Lee Keegan's ability and athleticism lets him get back and help. You know, he can recover a lot of the time. But when you're that close to goal and you're not an out and out fullback, because while the game has obviously evolved and we've attacking cornerbacks and everything else, and you've chatted about before in the show, flying cornerbacks, being a fullback, it's a different game. And anyone who's listened to the show, who's played halfback or midfield and was tried a couple of games fullback, like I remember Johnny Cooper got injured in a warm up in a league game in Croke Park against Tyrone, and I got put back on Stephen O'Neill for the first half. Right, I was as close to Stephen O'Neill as humanly possibly. He scored 4 points off me in the first half. The player he was, all he needed was a half a yard. And I was like, this is an awful game to play as a fullback. I do not like playing Gaelic football as a fullback because it's a different sport.
Oh, you're right. I've played cornerback myself about 20 years ago for Leash. I don't know how anyone in the fullback line actually enjoys playing Gaelic football. It's a desperate life altogether. But this, I did. Some of them thrive on it, but Lee Keegan isn't one of them. And you're right.
No.
You're kind of after leading us into some matchups here, Conor. And that's like, I mean, Lee Keegan can't mark Conor. Now, this can't be a situation where James Horan goes, look, I'm doubling down on it. You know, I was right and wants to be proved right. James Horan needs to say that didn't work. Lee Keegan is not smart enough in the fullback line for a player as tricky as Conn. And Lee Keegan has to mark Kieran Kilkenny, who Kieran Kilkenny is brilliant, but is not as light. He's not as light footed as Conn, and he doesn't have as good a turn as Conn, and you won't be tricked. That Kieran Kilkenny's more powerful, you know, and Keegan's marked him before. And I'd say to Lee Keegan, if Kilkenny goes out, follow him. If he comes in, follow him. But under those circumstances, should Lee Keegan be marking Conn? And one of the issues with the Mayo matchups is you'd probably put Chris Barrett onto Conn, and then Conn goes out centre back. What do Mayo do in that situation? Should Barrett just play centre back? Like, the matchups that I see in the Mayo backline suiting the Dublin forwards drags their players out of position potentially a little bit.
No, they definitely do. I still haven't made up my mind who I want to mark Conor Callan for Mayo, but it's certainly not Lee Keegan. And that was only reinforced after, for my sins, watching the 12-minute sequence after halftime in last year's semi-final last night, where he absolutely destroyed him, and it showed up why Lee Keegan isn't a cornerback or shouldn't be in the full back line, especially when Conn's second goal, when he just stood him up, you know, it took a solo dummy, and Lee Keegan didn't even chase him back. You know, if Conor Callaghan's shot was initially saved, he would have had a free pass on the rebound as well. And funnily enough, the same thing happened against Michael Quinlivan in the first half of the semi-final, where Keegan lost the ball and he just stood up again, and David Clark kind of got him out of jail. So I agree. I think it's Keegan on Kilkenny. Now, I think I think when, like, Keegan absolutely quietened him in the 17 final. I think I heard Andy Moran say that Kieran Kilkenny got 8 touches in that whole game. And Lee Keegan got a goal and could have got a penalty off Kieran Kilkenny as well. Completely kind of obliterated him. Now, they've come on since. I think Kilkenny now, especially since the final replay last year, has become more of a direct attacking threat rather than somebody who's happy to kind of get loads of possessions and link things around the half-forward line. He wants to be a scorer now. So I think that's more of a danger to Mayo than Kilkenny might have been previously. But I think Keegan on Kilkenny, and I think that I get what you're saying about Barrett on Conn, but I think that Barrett will pick up whoever is going to be kind of closer to goal. And in that instance, it might be Dean Rock. Probably not as much of a goal threat as Conor Callan would be, but I think Horn will want to avoid that situation where Barrett is caught maybe having to go out centre back, and what do we do then? So I'd say,
but then you're leaving poor Oisin Mullen on Conn. That's a mismatch too, because he wouldn't be cute enough for him.
Oisin Mullen or Stephen Cohen, and like I don't know what Gerard knows Stephen Cohen well as well. I don't know what anyone thinks about the possibility of Stephen Cohen marking Conn. It's just that that was the other potential option because. And I'm only going on the fact that, like, Stephen Cohen is actually, like, I know he's playing 6 this year, but he's actually done a couple of decent man-marking jobs before, including on Jim McConnelly when Lee Geegan got the black card in the 16 final.
And he did very well on Colin O'Riordan. He was man-marking O'Riordan the last
very game. Well, no, O'Riordan. And, like, how much this comes into it as well. And, again, Gerald no more, but they know each other well from UCD. They played with each other, Sigerson, for a good while as well. So that's my only reason why I think that, especially where Conn has been positioning himself, which is a lot around the 40. He's been an option for kickouts as well. So just with James Horne maybe thinking about not messing up the Mayo defensive shape too much, I think that might materialize. But again, like I'm back and forward all week on who's going to mark who. And because I worry about that. Like, I'm in years gone past, I think Mayo would have looked at the Dublin forwards, you know, and thought, right, we have a man for him. You know, we have 6 backs and we have a man for each Dublin forward. Whereas I'm not really sure about that, and I think that Dublin have the potential to mess with Mayo's heads a bit in terms of how they position their various forwards. But right now, I'm thinking, yeah, Keegan O'Kenny and maybe Stephen Cohen on Conor Callan.
Right, I was going with Barrett on Conn, and I was going Cohen back on Dean Rock, and Lee Keegan playing centre back, then probably on Kilkenny or following Kilkenny. But again, like two players that I wasn't given any man marking job was to McLaughlin and Durkin on the wings. That would be a big mistake because they're so good, Jer going forward. Like, I mean, and you've got Scully, and you have whoever's going to be on the other wing. You know, probably Bugler. You know, that's going to be a good battle, and Bugler and Scully will have it all to do to be curbing the influence of those two wing backs.
Yeah, they'll have their hands full there. But again, at the same time, the Mayo defenders and I think it's part of Paddy Durkin's game that he still has to improve greatly upon his actual ability to defend. I think he can become just too maybe fixated or caught up on using his pace and which he has in abundance and breaking the line and sometimes forcing the shot. And I think there's an awful lot more improvements in Paddy Durkin. But in terms of platforms for attack, the Mayo's half back line for the last, again, 10, 12 years, and again, I'd much rather see Lee Keegan in that half back line. You know, a lot of what was good about Mayo over the years has come from their ability, their wing backs' abilities to break the line. I go back to what Connor's talking about, Stephen Cohen, right? Stephen Cohen won a Fresh Array All Ireland with UCD with Colin O'Riordan, before Colin went over to Australia. And he's obviously won 2 Sigerson's then with Conn O'Callaghan. So I would think that they might put Cohen on Conn.
Right.
I think it'll be a challenge, obviously, for Stephen. How talented Conn is, but if I was a Stephen Cohen marking the likes of a Conn O'Callaghan, in my head I'm saying if I can limit him to maybe 2-3 scores over 70 minutes, and if he wins a few balls in front of me, forcing back, well then that's not a bad job done. And I think Cohen did a great job on O'Riordan. I think he did a great job on Darren McConnelly when he came on in the past. He's extremely fit and athletic and disciplined, and if you can stop, because I think a lot of what's good about Dublin in the forward unit, they obviously have a load of different moving parts, but I think Conn is a huge part of the Dublin forward line and how they've been taken over this year, as has Kieran Kilkenny. Lee Keegan, Markin, I fully agree with you. I think Lee, Markin, Kieran is probably something they'll do because of his past history, Lee's past history in totally curbing Kieran's influence. But he have mentioned it as well. Kieran has gone back to what he was known for coming out of minor, was his directness, his ability to win ball, to create a half a yard and get the shot off. He's actually gone back to that style of play the last couple of seasons. It's great to see, as opposed to the left passing the ball laterally the whole time, you know, which was extremely boring, you know.
Yeah, it was for a couple of seasons. What about the other side then, Connor? Like, I mean, I have down here Davy Byrne versus Aidan O'Shea. Michael Fitzsimons, probably a banker to mark O'Connor, Keane O'Connor, or Killian O'Connor. And then you have Johnny Cooper on Tommy Conroy. And in the halfback line, you probably have James McCarthy going to pick up Dermot O'Connor, who, you know, that's always been a good battle between them. That's kind of how I see those matchups going.
Yeah, I have the exact same ones as you, Willie, actually, because I suppose there's been maybe a question about what Dublin will do with Aidan O'Shea. But like, think about Mayo's use of Aidan O'Shea so far is that they haven't really, since the Galway game in the league, he hasn't really been used as a direct ball option or a long ball option by Mayo. Like, I think he got 1 point against Tip. He fist passed it over the bar. But apart from that, Aidan O'Shea's best work for Mayo has been as a kind of a, how he leads the tackling in the full forward line.
Yeah.
And actually linking, he showed some brilliant hands against Tip, especially for the Killian O'Connor goal where he kind of shook off the Tip defender kind of coming in on goal. So I think that Sean Kelly for Galway against Mayo was brilliant on Aidan O'Shea. He's probably Galway's best player, and he's not a man mountain by any stretch of the imagination. So I think they will go with Davy Byrne on Aidan O'Shea. I think the Simons, as you said, is a banker. He's their best man marker. Killian is Mayo's biggest scoring threat. I half thought they might put Owen Merchant on Tommy Conroy because of pure like match like for like with pace. But I get what you like. Tommy Conroy probably hasn't been dogged by somebody like Johnny Cooper before. And in his first All-Ireland final and somebody as experienced as Johnny Cooper, I think they might go that way, especially with, then you could free up Owen Merchant. If he was to tag maybe Kevin McLaughlin, for example, there will be space for Owen Merchant at times to do what he did against Kevin and kind of, you know, filter back as a plus one in front of the Dublin full back line. So, and I think everything else you have there, maybe James McCarthy on Dermot O'Connor works as well. And I think John Small will go on Ryan O'Donoghue as well, because I think physically he's a lot stronger than Ryan O'Donoghue. Again, like just somebody with so much experience probably thinking, you know, I'm going to show this lad what playing an All-Ireland final against Dublin is about. So again, I think Dublin's matchups in the back line are far easier, kind of too determined than Mayo's are going to be on Saturday.
And you can actually see how, you know, they're good matchups for Dublin. One thing that's important for Mayo, Ger, is that, you know, there's obviously a perception out there that this Dublin fullback line could potentially be got at with long, you know, with good diagonal balls from in around the half forward line, you know, good ones. What Dublin are very good at is, you know, if a long ball goes into Aidan O'Shea, whoever's playing the sweeper is in on top of it. And not just him, it's another halfback might be in on top of it as well. And they're good at getting in there when they see the ball going over their head. The one thing that other teams do to play into their hands is that they don't have a half forward line. So not only Dublin won't bring a forward back to sweep, that's out of the question. So Dublin always have a halfback free to sweep. You know, because the other team is worried about dropping men back. And not only will they have probably a centre half back to sweep, they might even have one of the wing backs. And especially if they're a little bit worried about O'Shea, they're definitely not going to follow on. They're going to hold. So if the ball goes over their head, they're doubling back and they're bottling up O'Shea. So what Mayo absolutely have to do, you cannot have a kick pass game without having your half forwards engage the Dublin half back line. You know what I mean? It's impossible otherwise. You won't get the one-on-ones, Chair.
No, I agree with everything you've kind of said there. Like, I think that, you know, and Owen Merchant has done it quite well in kind of tucking in on it.
They've been freeing him up, yeah.
Yeah, and those few matchups you mentioned, I think I would agree with them too. If Aidan O'Shea is causing a bit of bother in there, I think you could see Philly McMahon come on, quick enough, because Philly has managed to deal with Aiden on a couple of occasions, and he might be able to put a hold on Aiden if he is getting a bit of joy. For me, Willie and Connor, Mayo's the most important thing for Mayo is to get the press right up front when they don't have the ball. Was it maybe to go to 2-6 they scored against Tip from turning them over further up the field? If Mayo's forwards can get that right and apply a level of pressure that they did apply against Tipperary and the previous games, it'll be one of the first times, well, it will be probably the first time this year, this season, 2020, where Dublin defenders have had to think about moving the ball or what they're going to do with it when they're coming out of their own defence. And they just haven't had to think that way, because most teams tend to drop off against Dublin, or the Dublin defender breaks the initial tackle. But yeah. I would say that Mayo's forwards, their ability to tackle has improved greatly. It's obviously something they're being coached on, and they're working on, because they're staying in the game. If you get me, they're not doing the usual full forward, throwing your hands up in the air, trying to get the intercepts. They're putting a hand in the air, but they're keeping an athletic position in case the ball isn't passed, so they can move with the opposition defender, and they're staying goal side, and that's something that I think Mayo's forwards are doing particularly well. If Mayo, that's their best chance of causing an upset for Dublin in turning them over, where the Dublin defence will be a bit more unsettled because of the nature to turn over and the fact that they won't be used to being turned over. I think Mayo coming out with the ball, whatever way they want to play it, engaging half forward line for Mayo, diagonal balls in, I think Dublin are going to deal with it. I think Mayo's best chance is forcing the turnovers up the field. And just to throw in quickly, and correct me now if I'm wrong, but like, I think the Dublin full backs, they sometimes get not so much a hard doing, but it is noted, it is spoken about that this is one of Dublin's weakest lines. I would disagree. I think you have to contextualise the position of the field, and I mentioned it briefly that as a defender and a full back in particular and a keeper, you know, any sort of slip could be a goal. Any misreading of the ball could be a goal. Any foul, it's a free or it's a penalty. There's no other part in the pitch in Gaelic football where those mistakes will result in a potential goal or a penalty. And that's something that I think we should probably have in mind. I'm advocating for the full back line ever done, but I actually think Bar Johnny got caught out against Clifford the first day a couple of years ago. Other than that, I think the full back line, whoever's been in there, have performed particularly well.
Yeah, they usually have. Against Dangerman, Andy Moran has got some joy off them in there. Obviously, Kerry have as well. The conundrum for a half-forward line, Connor, always against Dublin, is, and it'll be Kevin McLaughlin, it'll be Dermot O'Connor on the two wings, and it'll be either Ryan O'Donoghue or Mark Moran in centre-half forward. This is their conundrum. Do I drop back? Now, obviously, there's going to be stages where Kevin McLaughlin and Dermot O'Connor in particular are going to have to chase McDade and whoever, James McCarthy, back, because they'll take it upon themselves to join the attack. That's fine. It's the times where Kevin McLaughlin, Dermot O'Connor and Ryan O'Donoghue are choosing to go back themselves, which so many teams do. You know, two of the three Dublin defenders won't follow them. And now, even if these hard-working half-forwards, even if they go back and do the job that they're supposed to do and to turn over the ball, you look up the field, and what do you see? Two half-backs covering your three full-four. Do you get me? Like, I mean, it is a conundrum with Dublin, because your natural instinct is to say, we need extra bodies back here, they're too good up front. But you're ruining your chance of a counter-attack or a kick-passing counter-attack. And to be honest, to outpoint Dublin, it's almost like outpointing Limerick in hurling. And a lot of teams in Limerick and hurling are falling into playing the sweeper, and I think it's counterproductive. The underdog on a given day, it may be 1 out of 10 could beat the favourite, you know? And what'll they beat them with? They'll probably beat them with a scoreline of 3-9 to 15 points, you know what I mean? Or 16 points, something like that. The way teams set up against Dublin, they actually can't beat them.
No, I agree. And what Mayo do the next day, especially in terms of their half-forward line, I think will depend a lot, Willie, I think it'll depend a lot about the platform that Mayo can get from their own kickout. So, like, you know, like it's not exactly new original to suggest that, like, Mayo have had, you know, a lot of problems on their kickouts coming into this game. So I think that whatever strategy they come up with, it will probably involve flooding bodies around, you know, especially if they go long, and Dublin would be mad if they don't press on David Clark's kickouts, given what they've seen to date. So I think that Mayo will have to flood a lot of bodies around wherever Clark's kickouts go to. And he's not the longest kicker in the world. We know all that too. So I think that that's going to have to, Kevin McLaughlin and Dermot O'Connor are going to have to be heavily involved in trying to win breaking ball at times without sacrificing the need, because it's all well and good to be winning breaking ball. And then you look up and you have, you know, oceans of space, but filled by two Dublin defenders who have dropped back in to fill the space in front of the full forward line. So I think, I think the Mayo are going to be more aggressive on that than other teams have been. Like, I agree, as in, like, that the way that a lot of teams have set up against Dublin, they just don't give themselves the chance. And worse, they give Dublin the platform to play that patient football that they're brilliant at, because they're just surrendering an extra man around the middle of the pitch, basically. So how Mayo go about that, I'm sure it's been probably the sole focus of James Horden's attention for the last couple of weeks. But again, I just think it's going to usually come back to the platform that Mayo can get out of their own kickouts, because obviously if they're struggling there, you know, Kevin McLaughlin and Jeremy O'Connor will think that they're going to have to try and come back and win some ball too. So I just hope that that Mayo will still have an outlet. And like Ryan O'Donoghue has been brilliant this year, I think that a big loss, probably has been mentioned a lot this year, has been Jason Doherty, who's been brilliant at holding that line for Mayo in the past. So listen, hopefully Mayo get enough platform out of their own kickouts that they can still retain that option around the half forward line, because he said it's going to be crucial if they are going to give themselves a chance.
Well, that's the thing, Ger, and you know from playing in the half-back line, I've played in the half-back line and in the half-forward line. So, like, I mean, half-forwards usually get in for the breaks. The half-back is a little bit more conservative. Like, I mean, he's not going to rush in like a fool and get caught behind him. So it's often the half-forwards on both teams that are descending in on that breaking ball.
Yeah, there's less risk involved for the wing-forwards. The half hour to tuck in and to try to win that break. But as a centre back, yeah, you're always conscious of holding the middle and not conceding in case the unexpected happens. I know we're talking about how maybe Mayo might break Dublin down. What's the Cavan centre back? What was his name again? I'm trying to think of his name.
Clark.
Like Clark was a great example of somebody who was driving on and trying to turn.
Oh no, not Killian Clark. Brady, the centre back who played well in the first half.
Yeah,
Kieran Brady.
So what he was doing for Cavan is something that Dublin weren't used to experiencing, where you actually had somebody who was trying to stand up the Dublin opponents and turn the Dublin player to face to make him defend running towards his own goal. And in the early stages of the game, where Cavan were a bit fresher, they had a couple of runners off and it looked like something might open up here. Mayo are far more conditioned, far more athletic, and if they can add numbers to their attack, if their two wing backs if Mayo's two wing forwards have turned back, have worked back, they've thrown the ball over, if they can break in numbers like that and force the Dublin player to be defending, running towards his own goal, they'll actually cause a bit of bother. But unless they take that chance, again, it's hard to see how Mayo might be able to gain the victory.
That's the thing. Like, it is hard, but you mentioned the kickouts, Conor, and we'll finish up on this talking point. Is Dublin are going to press Clark? Clark's short kickout is desperate. Clark has to go long. Fenton's too good in the air. You know, like, I mean, there's a lot of things. The area of the field that Dublin have the biggest advantage is from kickouts, both with a stronger midfield in the air More physicality, and with a goalkeeper that has a 10 times better kick out than Clark. So, like, I mean, what Mayo do here is very, very difficult. Like, Clark simply has to go long. He can't go messing with the short ones. He's not good at them. And Dublin are going to zonally press and going to make it so hard for Mayo. He has to go long. Now, what do they do when he goes long? Like we said, they are very good at committing bodies to breaking ball area. Like, I mean, you see a lot of them. You even see their full forward line running out to get towards that area. That's really all they can do. But then I suppose, like you say, if they've all done that, when they win it, who's around? You know what I mean? They've been dragged completely out of position to try and get bodies to that breaking ball area. I can see Mayo matching Dublin in a lot of areas. This is the area where, you know, like, I mean, if you can't win primary possession, you know, you're win kickouts just as easily as Dublin do. Like, it's not a worry for Dublin. Like, I mean, whereas Mayo will be scratching their heads almost on every kickout.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's just like, I was just looking again, Willie, there's Don't Foul on Twitter did a great analysis of kind of kickouts during the week as well. And like when Mayo have gone past the 45 so far this year, their return is just over 50%. And they've actually conceded more from that return than they've scored from, you know, winning the kickouts outside the 45. And past the 45, I mean, that's not just long kickouts. Like David Clark is kicking from the 20 metres. These are kickouts that are any longer 20 meters on. These are any kickouts that are longer than 25 meters. One of the things that really annoyed me in the semi-final, the second half of the semi-final against Tip, was these floated balls to just beyond the 45 to stationary Mayo men that were standing still and asking the likes of Colin Reardon and a few Tip fellas to attack, and then just opening up the platform for Tip to attack directly down the middle. So yeah. Mayo haven't learned from that. I mean, we're, you know, it's we haven't a hope on Saturday. It's just, again, when you say you have to go long, I think that It's a fairly simple tactic. It's been practiced by a few teams in the last few years, but it's just this thing of maybe overloading one side and just committing as many men to the press as possible. And Mayo that's what Mayo have done, and that's what Mayo have done quite well. But again, it's trying to keep it away from Brian Fenton at the same time, which is easier said than done. So I don't know, like what Mayo have been doing so far has been really high wire stuff, really loopy kind of kickouts, that really been hard to win. So like I don't know, unless Mayo have had a plan under their hat for specifically for Dublin all year, it's a huge concern. And if I was Dublin, the first thing I'd be doing is watching the first 15 minutes of the second half of the semi final last year and doing the exact same thing, pressing as high as possible. It was Robbie Henley that was in goals last year, but the tactic was still the same. Just absolutely pressurize Mayo as high up the pitch and kind of try to squeeze the life out of them up there. So it's my biggest concern. I really hope that the Mayo have something different, or even that they just have worked on that plan of committing bodies to the breaking ball, because otherwise we're going to be toast.
The big thing here, Ger, obviously for Mayo, is don't foul. Because if you foul, number one, it's going to be Dean Rock free, which is almost a guarantee in a big game. And not only that, is that the Dublin will have time to have their zone up in place. So not only are you conceding a point, you're looking out at the Dublin zone, and there's a very good chance it could be 2 points in a row, which is absolutely demoralising. Obviously, it's worse when Dublin have a crowd in there, and now you're fighting the atmosphere and two in a row. So if you can avoid, you know, kickable free kicks when Dublin can move up and get themselves into pressure, if Dublin want to kick a point from play, almost, you don't let them, but the one thing you do is don't foul them, because if Dublin kicked a point from play, the game is a bit scattered and Clark can run out, and he's not bad at doing that, in fairness. He's out very quick, ball down, it's away. You know, rather than a stupid foul. And a stupid foul means a point, and a stupid foul means, oh shit, what are we going to do off the next kickout?
It's the Mayo backs will have to have a few extra GPSs in their socks for Shane Rock, you know? I cut them off. A bit of a tangent. Did anyone? I think McEntee ran on and gave Lee Keegan that GPS. Did anyone ever watch that back? No.
No.
Yeah.
Have interrupt the kickouts, all right, but I didn't hear that.
Yeah, yeah. So, but anyway, I'm meandering. But the what you say there is absolutely correct, Woody. It's something we would have worked on and spoken about. When it was evolved, where was the opportunity to set your press when it was a free kick? because, like you say, the game slows down a bit. Your plus one that you might have been holding at the back or half back line can push a midfielder up or push a wing forward up. And everyone knows what they're doing when the free kick is taken. And what you see with Dean Rock a lot of the time, even if he's taking 45 and the ball goes over the bar, or he's taking a free kick and it's further out the pitch, you know, he's not always running back into the corner forward, the full forward position. He might hold the forward, the centre forward, or wing forward, and all the other Dublin players know what they're doing. But I think Clark's greatest strength is, and I actually played a year, Sigurdsson with Clark as well, Minute. So his ability to, well, certainly as a shot stopper, he's excellent, but on the kick-out point, he's much better and much more effective with a very, very quick ball, getting it down on the tee and getting it moving very, very quickly.
Yeah, he's quite good at that.
Yeah, he is good at that. So I would imagine that Stephen Cohen would be nearly leading the charges there, chatting to the defenders that we're going to go for 4 or 5 scoreable frees over the course of the 70-odd minutes. And if we can limit Dean Rock or whoever, the 4 or 5 scoreable frees, well, then we're doing okay. But what tends to happen with, not just with Dublin, but in Gaelic football, it's the midfielder or the wing forward sometimes tracking back, and he's after running 50, 60 yards, and he's after getting a bit tired and lazy, and he throws a stupid arm over the shoulder, which results in a soft free. So if Mayo can limit Dean Rock that way, I think they'll give themselves another opportunity to still be in the game, you know.
Okay, Conor, we'll finish up with predictions. What are you going for? The handicap here is 6, which we always have to mention for Dublin matches. Is it Dublin versus the handicap, or are you daring to dream?
daring to dream, I suppose, Willie. Like, I mean, like, Kevin McStay had a good column during the week, and he said that the process the Mayo supporters go through, he's like, you rationalise an argument the Mayo won't win it, and then by Friday, you've convinced yourself that they don't. I think I got to that stage by Monday or Tuesday, to be honest. Listen, all the evidence points to a relatively comfortable win for Dublin, like in the region of 6 points, which I think is the handicap. That's what my head says, my heart, and for the good of my own sanity for the next 2 days, to be honest, said the Mayo run the mighty close. And to go back to the force, Willie, maybe come into play again and say that this year of all years we'll get over the line. So head, Dublin, heart, by all means, Mayo.
Right, okay. What about you, Ger?
Yeah, there was a fella, Willie and Connor from Ballyhawness on the radio on Monday morning, and they were talking about the National Broadband Rollout Plan. And I can't think of your man's name, but he provides machinery for agribusiness. And he was talking about how his internet, they're only 3 miles outside of Ballyhawness, and the internet is forever failing, and they're losing out on international business because they service a lot of machines overseas from the base in Ballyhawness. So anyway, after a heated discussion on broadband and the National Rollout Plan and the man waiting 5 years to get the broadband, he was asked about the All-Ireland final the weekend, and he was asked, how do you think the game will go? And the Mayo man from Ballyhawness says, I have a better chance of getting the broadband into the business from the weekend. So that's my prediction, really.
Well, look, I don't know what to say about this game, Les, because that handicap is under a lot of pressure, and this could be a 10-point win for Dublin. I also think that, you know, if you're going off last year's game, there wasn't much in it outside of that 12 minutes. I know that might sound like a stupid thing to say, but there wasn't too much. Paul Mannion scored 5 from play. He's gone. Like, and he doesn't even look like he's any confidence. You have Brian Howard starting last year. We don't know if he's going to start. He probably will. Michael Darmacauley was playing last year. Mayo are a lot fresher. You know, they have a lot more pace. There's no Jack McCaffrey from last year. Paddy Durkin was sacrificed last year to be marking Jack McCaffrey. You know, we could see more of him. McLaughlin is a much better option attacking. Like, you know, Aidan O'Shea, if they get the right supply of ball into him and they don't let Dublin swallow him up, they could potentially get goals. No crowd. I'm a bit, I don't know, am I a little bit like Connor, where you think Dublin could easily hammer Mayo, but I think if Mayo stick in with them in the last 10 minutes without the crowd, you could make a case for Mayo potentially doing the impossible. I don't know, right? Dublin will beat the handicap is basically. Mayo, I don't know. Maybe it's just wishful. I mean, I don't know, Connor. Like, I mean, I'll ask you because Ger is just ruthless with stuff like this. He couldn't give a shit about Mayo, but I care about Mayo to a certain point. And while I wouldn't, you know, be changing my mind like a Mayo supporter, I find myself wrestling with, geez, could they do it? And making up reasons why they could.
Well, I think everybody to a certain degree is like that Mayo supporter that Kevin McStay was referring to, because they just, with all due respect to Dublin, just people are kind of sick of seeing them win. So they want no more than we do, you know, to come up with a romantic reason of why Mayo might do it. But if I'm honest about it, well, it's probably romantic reasons that I'm putting down for the fact that Mayo.
Yeah, me too. So
if it's cold and rational, I mean, it's Dublin all day. But like, listen, in this year of all years, we have to dare to dream. So I'm certainly going to do that ahead of Saturday.
Exactly. And you've never lost an All-Ireland in December during a pandemic. So we leave it there, lads. That's it. We'll be back on Monday and we'll review. We'll be back on Sunday, actually. So keep your eye out there. We'll do a Sunday show for the first time. We'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.